Sports Interview with Anne Liguori is brought to you by Orca Golf Bags. You golfers know that the golf bag is your biggest piece of equipment, so make it feel like you. Orca Golf Bags stand out in a sea of look-alike products. Orca Golf is the only women-owned golf bag design and build company in the country, and they do more than golf bags. Their gym and leisure bags are catching fire, and golf teams and universities can order in bulk. Visit orca-golf.com to learn more. That's orca-golf.com. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori, and I am delighted to say hello to Evan Schiller, who is a golf course photographer extraordinaire. He has photographed over 600 championship golf courses. He's published in countless magazines, books, calendars, producing prints, videos, just gorgeous, gorgeous work, Evan. And I've been a fan of your work for a long time and so glad you can join us right here on Sports Interview.
Thanks, Anne. It's really great to be here.
Now, this is not the line of work that you thought you would do with your life, right?
No. I started off playing golf. You know, I played junior golf, I played amateur golf, played college golf, and I turned professional. I played professional golf, tournament golf. Yeah, I thought that was the route I was going to take. You know, I was going to be a tour player or play golf for a living, which I did for a while. And then I worked at a couple of clubs as an assistant in Westchester, Westchester Country Club and Quaker Ridge. And it started to move towards golf course photography. You know, I actually took photos while I was playing golf, but that's how it kind of.
Yeah, and when I read in your bio that you were an assistant pro at Westchester Country Club and that Tom Patry suggested you sell your photography in the pro shop, I took lessons from Tom back in the day. And so you were probably at Westchester Country Club when I was, and you know, he used to play. Alan Brown had his charity golf tournament, celebrity golf tournament there every year. So I used to play Westchester Country Club a lot, and I bet you were there and we just didn't even connect, or maybe we did.
Maybe we did. You probably walked right by me on the range because Tom and I used to give lessons right next to each other.
Wow. So your goal was to become, well, you became a PGA golf pro, right? You played in the U.S. Open.
I did at Shinnecock, actually.
Now, which year? It had to have been in the 80s?
86.
86, right.
Yeah. Yeah, the year that Ray Floyd won.
And what was that like?
Scary. I don't know if it was lucky or serendipity, but I qualified on local courses in Westchester. I think the first qualifying, which was 36 holes, I think was at Knollwood Country Club. And then they had the sectional, which was 36 holes, and it was at Century and Old Oaks. And, you know, I knew both those courses, although they were set up pretty hard. And so I, to my surprise, you know, when I got in and I looked at my score, I said, heck, I think I might be in. So I got in, luckily. And then a friend of mine actually gave me his house to stay at in Hamptons. So
nice.
I had the house for the whole week. Yeah, it was just down the road. So that was pretty nice. Funny story, I remember going out to the range the first, I got there on Sunday before the tournament. I went out to the range and I remember it was a really foggy morning and I was hitting balls. And I sensed this guy who came up behind me started hitting balls. And I could feel the ground vibrate a little bit when he was hitting balls because he wasn't that. I was like, who the heck is that? I was like, and you could hear the sound. It was like this thud. And I was afraid. I was actually afraid to turn around. And I turned around. It was Greg Norman. Who was hitting balls there in the fog with me. And he remember in 1986, he led every major going into the last round.
Right.
And then out of the fog from the other direction, puts his balls down and starts hitting balls. Right in front of me is Jack Nicklaus.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I wanted to go and crawl under a rock and hide.
I mean, just to play in a U.S. Open and in at Shinnecock, obviously you being a golf pro in the New York metropolitan area, Shinnecock was such a storied history. And I mean, what a thrill of a lifetime. I was there covering it way back in the day. And with Raymond Floyd winning, and as you say, hitting balls next to Greg Norman and being, you know, right there with Jack Nicklaus and all the greats. I mean, what an experience, right?
It was, yeah, it was. And, you know, my parents came out. My father rented a house or something for, you know, my family and friends. I stayed at this other house and everybody came out, my friends. And I had a very good friend of mine caddy for me. You know, it was fun. You know, you got the courtesy car, the whole deal. It was, yeah, it was quite a week.
So that was early in 86, what, June, I guess, in 86, yeah. Right? And then you played in the California Open at PGA West. That would have been before Shinnecock, actually, is that right? When you actually brought your camera along?
It was actually after that.
Oh, was it? Okay.
In fact, it was... I think I saw Tom at the U.S. Open. Actually, sorry, this is an interesting. On Monday of that week, I had a drive back down to Mid Island. I forgot where it was we played, and I had to go qualify for the New York State Open. And I remember having a conversation with the New York Golf, the Met Golf. I said, are you kidding me? Really? I got to go qualify. I'm playing USA. Yep, I got to. So I drove down on Monday, played the qualifying. I actually played with Tom. I think that's how we got connected. Saw him later at the US Open. And he said, you know, I'm going out to play in the California Open in August. You want to go out? I said, yeah. So we played in the California Open in August in the desert. So it was 120 degrees.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And so you brought your camera along and started snapping photos. The desert scenery is very inspiring.
Yeah. Well, actually, I didn't have the camera and didn't have cell phones. That was the inspiration. After the tournament, somebody suggested that we go down the road to go play this new golf course, this new Pete Dye golf course. It's a stadium course at PGA West. It's just like the sister course of Sawgrass.
Right. Actually.
And, you know, the 17th hole there is an island green, just like it is at Sawgrass. And actually, the last three holes are very similar. You know, 8, 16 is a par 5, 17 is a par 3 with the island green. 18 is almost, not quite a replica, but it's a long par 4 with water running all along the left side. So they said, you should go play this course. So we got up early. I think it was the day after the tournament ended. And because we wanted to play before the heat. And that's when I, you know, on the ninth hole, walking down the ninth hole is, you know, fairly early, you know, this beautiful hole with the backdrop of there's this lake and then there's the bunker running the length of the hole, you know, Pete Dye with the railroad ties. And in the lake, there's this perfect reflection of the mountain. The hole is actually called Reflection. And that's when I said, you know what, I got to start bringing a camera. So yeah. That was the inspiration to start bringing a camera with me to all these trips.
That PGA West course, the Pete Dye course. And yes, I have to say my favorite in that area is the mountain course, right? I love that mountain course. And Tradition is my all-time favorite out there.
It's beautiful.
I just love the millions of flowers that they plant there. And, you know, it's just to keep it in just such pristine shape, all those courses out there.
Yeah.
I love desert golf in obviously, you know, the Palm Springs area, La Quinta, and in Scottsdale too. I mean, they're just beautiful.
Beautiful. You know, in 1986, when we went out there, the California Open was played, we played it on the mountain course and the Dinah Shore course at Mission Hills. And there was nothing out there in La Quinta. I mean, it was barely even a town.
Right,
I mean, PGA West was even barely developed. I mean, you know, Tradition was just sand.
Oh, really?
It wasn't even there. It was desert there. There was nothing. Nothing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I go out there and I have to play all of them, the palms. And yep. Yeah, I mean, they're all just prettier than the next. Like, I just love that area for golf for sure.
Beautiful.
So it's interesting that, and then, so when did you become a full-fledged photographer and forget about playing professional golf?
It was a slow transition. I know when I started, when I went home and got that camera, I started taking pictures of all the courses I played. And I remember I would put them up in my room, my top of my walls, like right along the wall up by the ceiling, was just lined with all these pictures that I had taken of all these courses. And I think it was at, you know, Westchester, when I took some photos, we put them in the pro shop during the Buick Classic. That's when I didn't think they would sell, but they did, to my surprise. I think that's when it kind of dawned on me, well, wait a second, maybe I could do this. And I had this sense I didn't really want to be in the golf business in that regard. I didn't want to be a head pro. I didn't want to be an assistant pro. I mean, I liked what I was doing at Westchester. It was great. I got to teach and go play in tournaments, you know, and I did some shop time. But so I had a pretty nice, you know, pretty nice gig there. I think it was after I left Westchester, I started taking more and more photos. I did some more courses around Westchester and Long Island, and it just started to grow from there. And eventually,
and every course
transitioned.
Is just,
yeah,
I was just gonna say, every course is so different. We're talking desert golf and then Long Island golf. I mean, even all the courses on Long Island are just so different. Shinnecock from Sabonic, from National, from Maidstone. You know, my neck of the woods. So you definitely have an eye of an artist extraordinaire. I mean, that's something that you can't teach. I know when I go around and play golf, I feel like I could have been a photographer as well, because that's all I want to do is take pictures. And you're always, I play golf or do anything now. It's not just when I play golf. Everything I do now, I my view is a view of a photographer. It's just a natural thing for me, right? I think I look at the world like a photographer may look at the world. You know, if I see a beautiful angle or the light's perfect, or so I really kind of, I think I understand like what you, you know, what you do, but you do it to such an incredible, extraordinary level. You have to know the right angles. Obviously lighting is everything.
Yes.
And the pictures that you take, you know, are at various times of the day with various types of weather and cloud cover. And talk a little bit about your process, because it just makes or breaks the picture.
It does. Yeah. Well, with every shoot I do, I make it a point to get there. I mean, this is after the shoot has been set up and there's been a contract and all that. So that's the, you know, but I make it a point of scouting every course. So I know what holes I want to shoot, potentially when, what areas, maybe what time. And I think having done this for, you know, 25 years now, you have a sense of what might happen or what might be possible. If that makes sense. Like I'll look at a hole or a scene and say, boy, this might be really great as soon as the sun comes over those trees, or as soon as it comes, or in the afternoon when the sun's over there. So I think over years I've been able to anticipate what might happen. It's not always the case, but that's part of it. The other part is just showing up. I think just being there, just in case, you know, I think of this photo I took at Bandon Dunes a number of years ago, and it was an overcast, kind of a misty, cloudy, foggy, you know, the marine layer, the fog is coming in off the water. It's a little breezy. It's a little, you know, spitting rain. And I'm out there in my rain suit in the cart, and it's kind of cold and damp. And, you know, some people might say, well, what are you doing out here? And my thought was, I'm going to just stay here just in case, you know, supposing the clouds break and the sun comes out and I've got literally 1 minute of sunshine or where the sun will hit this hole. If I'm not there, right, you know, if I'm in the clubhouse waiting for the sun to come out, I'll miss it.
Sure.
Or, even with that shot, I happened to take it with a drone. I literally took the drone off. It was, you know, it was kind of a little misty, which I don't like flying in the rain, but it was a little bit, it wasn't bad. So I took it off and I literally hovered the drone in place for, I don't know, 15 minutes. Because I knew if the sun came out, I might miss it if it wasn't in position. And the sun came out for, I don't know, maybe 30 seconds. And I got a few frames and that was it. And one of my favorite photos ever. So it's partially, you know, it's the scouting, it's the anticipating, it's from years of experience, just knowing where you want to be, angled, sure. And also experimenting. With certain-
and yeah, as you said, it's experience and instincts. I mean, I'm sure you rely a lot on your natural instincts for just when, you know, the right moment will be to get that magical shot.
Yeah. I even, you know, sometimes after I scout a course, I make myself little notes, you know, okay, I'll have like, okay, these are the AM shots and these are the PM shots. And okay, these are the AM shots. Then I'm going to do this one first, this one next, this one, you know, that's, it's kind of a semi plan, but it's subject to change because you may have to adjust on the fly because you show up somewhere and it's not exactly what you thought. So you say, okay, well, nope, this is no good. Let's go here. So it's this constant adjusting on the fly. Yeah, it is a lot of instinct, but that's also based on a lot of experience.
Sure. I mean, I would do television shows promoting golf courses throughout Ireland and Northern Ireland for years. Yep. And this was back in the day when our camera crews had those huge cameras, right? And you couldn't get them wet or the camera would be done. So lucky for us, I mean, if you saw the two or three dozen shows, TV shows we did, you know, on these golf courses, you would think it was sunny there all the time because we literally had to wait, you know, for the good weather, right, to do the shows there. But in your instance, now with the technology, I mean, you can go out with, you know, your smaller cameras and your drones and as you say, you know, be ready for the shot when the rain is gone, right? So talk a little bit about the technology that you use these days to get these incredible images.
Yeah, I've just to your point about, I've hunkered down in a lot of bunkers or huts in Ireland when it was, you know, raining sideways and blowing so hard you could barely stand up. And then the next minute it clears and the sun comes out. You know,
that's right.
Like, protect the drone.
Six seasons in a day in Ireland, and that's no exaggeration.
So the equipment and technology, well, there's three things. I have a camera that would you would call a traditional, it's a medium format camera. It's a Hasselblad. It's called the Hasselblad HD60. It takes great shots. I mean, puts out these incredible files. So I use that, you know, for shooting stuff on the ground. Usually it's on a tripod on the ground, or it's a tripod mounted on the top of a golf cart. So golf cart is part of my technology. And then also I use a drone. The drone is an Inspire 2. It's made by DJI. And one of the things I like about it, it's a larger drone than a lot of people use. You know, some people use a Phantom or they use a Mavic 2 Pro, which are much smaller. But I like this drone for two reasons. One is its size. So in the wind, it's pretty stable. The other reason I like it, it has two cameras I can use with it and also interchangeable lenses, which the other ones don't have. You know, so I got three or four lenses I can change into, you know, wide angle, zoom, so I can get tighter shots. It puts out incredible files. The video is, you know, is wonderful. I mean, it can shoot up to 6K video with it when on this little drone. I mean, they actually film commercials and movies on this thing now, which is amazing.
Wow. And you can, they're portable, right? They're not, you can travel everywhere and it's very, these cameras are very portable.
Yeah, the camera comes with me on, when I travel on a plane, the camera comes on the plane. The drone has its own case because it's too big to carry on the plane. So it has this big hard, you know, like a Pelican hard case that I put in there, and it travels that. So I have to check it or I send it ahead. So it travels in that. And then the other is, you know, the computer and software, you know, using like things like Lightroom or Photoshop to do your post-production.
Right. So asking you what courses are your favorites to photograph is probably similar to asking you like which child is your favorite, but I'm sure there are some courses that just stand out as far as the dramatic scenery and the lighting goes. If you could answer which golf course, you know, based on maybe scenery and lighting are your favorites to shoot.
Yeah. I love going to Ireland. Well, the scenery is beautiful. The topography, the landscapes are just incredible, as you know. And the light is, I've usually gone in September, which is my favorite month to go there. The sun is a little bit lower than it is at other times of year. And there's just something really magical about the light there, you know, especially because you can get these dramatic weather changes. You know, it could be raining at any moment, and then the sun comes out and you get a rainbow, or you get this incredible light, you know, because there's some dark clouds in the distance, or, you know, there's this, you know, after it rains, it's wet, so the ground is kind of like glimmering a little bit. So I would say, you know, almost any place in Ireland. And then places along, like Bandon Dunes.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's along the coast. And again, the weather, you know, you have these, can have these dramatic changes in weather, you know, where the weather, marine layer, the fog will roll in and out. And it, you know, there's like that day at Bandon Dunes, that shot. And there was another day I recall out at Old MacDonald where we were playing and the fog was hovering along the coast, just, I mean, literally right along the coast. And then it would come in like halfway over the golf course and then go back out. And then come back in over the golf course and go out. And we were playing. And I said, boy, if this keeps up, when we go to shoot, it's going to be incredible. And it did. You know, it was just, it would hover along the coast. Then it would come in. In fact, there was one point it came in so fast. I look at my, it engulfed my drone. It was gone. It was like that movie with a fog where the fog would come in and people would disappear.
It was, oh my God, I lost my drone.
I was like, oh my God, where is it? You know, my wife said, I don't know, it's in the fog. You know, so I pushed, I right away pushed up so it would go up above it. So, I mean, I was literally taking photos from above the fog down through the fog of the golf course.
That's cool.
So it was like, you know, it was these little openings in it. It was, you know, I just remember some of these shots I took of the seventh hole at Old MacDonald because it sits up on that, you know, that ridge, that mound or the dune right by the water.
Right. And Bandon Dunes is like with the six different golf courses there. It's just, with the dramatic coastline, it's just unbelievable. And you mentioned Old MacDonald. I almost had a hole in one on a par four there. Wow. And I tapped in for eagle. It was just so that's a magical memory for me. So, but all those golf courses are just so unique, you know, and Bandon Trails, that's so different from the other ones too.
I remember a morning at Bandon Trails with the fog. It was, you know, it was really cool.
Really cool. I mean, I just think, you know, you're just have so much, your work never ceases because the light's different. The time of the year is different. The holes look different depending on the moment. I mean, there's unlimited possibilities for what you do.
It's all about the light but also composition. You know, it's about the light composition. I'll just share one more story in that regard. It wasn't on the coast. It was at Sand Valley up in Wisconsin, which is, you know, it's landlocked, but it's built over these, it's a sandy terrain. It was an old glacier that left this dunes and this sandy terrain where they built these, you know, mammoth dunes in Sand Valley. And it had literally been raining, I think, for 3.5 straight days, going on a fourth. And I'm waiting around. And I remember talking to the GM there. He said, well, you know, can you stay longer because it's been raining? I said, yeah, I can stay a couple more days. We got to get this done, right? So on the fourth day, it's getting towards the end of the day. I was hanging out at the maintenance barn and everybody had left. And I said, well, you know what? I'm going to hang out. You never know. And, you know, it's getting near sunset. And I just happened to look on the horizon and I could see this little break in the clouds. And I thought, and it's still raining. you know what? I'm going to load my stuff up in the cart. It had one of these carts that could, you know, pull the plastic around. And
right.
I loaded everything in the cart and I drove out, because to get out to where I wanted to get, it was on Mammoth Dunes. It was a bit of a drive. So I drove out and it's raining. I got my towels and everything. I'm trying to keep everything dry. I get out there, it's still raining. And I'm thinking to myself, there's nobody out there. I must be nuts. And like similar to what happened at Bandit, the clouds broke. It was like three instances. But each instance it broke, it was for literally maybe minutes. So I remember I got some shots of the 10th hole, I got some shots of the 13th hole, and I got some shots of the 8th hole. But I mean, literally the sun came out for minutes on each one of them. And that was
very special. Very, yeah. Very special. And you had mentioned Ireland. And Ireland, you know, just when you think you've seen the most gorgeous, breathtaking golf hole on the planet, you know, you go to the next course, you know, down the road, and it just blows you away. And there's just so many, I mean, so many great holes to photograph over there, just all over the world. What a great career, Evan, really. I mean, it's, you have a passion for what you do, and you're very good at social media, I must say, because every day you're, now are you doing this personally, or do you have somebody who's helping you with the social media?
I do it.
Very astute at it.
I do it. I like it. I mean, it's somewhat timey, but I like it.
Yeah.
I mean, I like giving some thought to what I'm going to post, but also what I'm going to write. You know, I like to include some kind of story about the photo or something that might be of interest rather than just popping a photo up there. Because I know when I look at, I see people like a video or I see a photo of another photographer, I enjoy reading the story behind it. It gives it more meaning, you know, and I feel more, you know, connection to that person.
Who are some of these? You mentioned, you know, some of your colleagues in the business. Who are some of the colleagues and your colleagues in golf course photography that you admire or that you follow?
Let's see. There's a Gary Lisbon, who lives in Australia. Mm-hmm. I know they're in lockdown, so he hasn't been able to go much. Kevin Murray, who lives in the UK, Brian Orr, who lives out west, I think he lives in Utah. Yeah, they've always admired their work. And David Cannon, I think, who you know, who's also from the UK. He shoots mostly tournaments. I've always admired what he does at golf tournaments and his golf course photography as well.
Right.
Really nice.
And Joanne Dost.
Yes. Sure, you know Joanne. Yes, I know Joanne, and Joanne's been, God, she's probably been doing it longer than anybody.
And she used to be a professional as well. She played on the LPGA tour.
She did. Yes. She did.
I love Joanne's work.
Joanne does some great work. We keep in touch every once in a while. We touch base with one another.
And talk about Augusta National. I mean, how many times have you been able to photograph on Augusta National?
Wow. I want to say, I've been to the Masters, I think, what was there, six years in a row. So I shot the tournament. And then I've been there on two other occasions just to shoot the golf course.
And what are your favorite holes there on Augusta?
Wow.
To shoot.
I would have to say probably... That area of 12 and 13 is
right.
Yeah.
Amen corner, obviously, starting with 11 and 12, the par three, and then 13, the par five. I mean, with all the azaleas in bloom and the dogwoods.
I think the hole that I really, you know, when I first saw it, that I was really impressed with and surprised, impressed, and blown away was 10.
Oh, yeah.
I remember walking down the hill and looking at it. Went, oh my God, look at
that! Is some hill, and right? I mean, you can't tell how elevated it is, you know, when you're watching it on TV. And until you walk it, that is some major hill.
And how much bend there is to the dog leg. You don't realize how much downhill. It's really. I remember walking down the hill, looking, going, "Oh my God, that is really cool." Yeah, that's a good one. I was there on, it was in 2000, five. When Tiger chipped in on 16.
That, yep.
I was there. I remember there's a spot on the grandstand on 15. It was all the way top right. Now the grandstands, the top row in the grandstands is reserved for media and members. And I remember a couple of days prior to that, I had tried to get up there and it was just packed with members. And it was like, you know, I want to get over there. And they're looking at me like, are you out of your mind, buddy? So I made friends with this guy who was a member. And I said, man, I really would love to get up here on Sunday. He goes, you know what? I'm going to come up here. I'm going to sit up here on Sunday. I'm going to save this place for you. So you save the end for me. So I walked Sunday afternoon, I walked out, he goes, but get here somewhat early before Tiger's group get, because it's just going to be crazy.
Sure.
So I got there like an hour early and just sat there. And, you know, I mean, you could just see this throng of people coming as the last groups were coming. And I sat there in that corner and had a perfect view of the whole thing.
Did you photograph the moment?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And my, I don't know if there's a kind of a famous photo where you see, you know, it's Tiger's go, you can see it through the arms of the people. I don't
remember. Oh, interesting.
I didn't get it. My friend, Steve Zerley, who worked for Golf Digest, he got it. But it's, I actually have it right here hanging on my wall. But yeah, it was, I mean, the grandstands were shaking.
What a great memory. I called that shot. WFAN threw it to me for my update just as Tiger hit that ball.
Yeah.
And so it was like doing play-by-play of that shot with the Nike ball just hanging on the lip of that cup for a few seconds. But when you were shooting it, did you just constant?
I only saw it through my camera.
Yeah. Did you get the whole, like the sequence of the entire shot? Fun.
I did. It was, yeah. You know, from where I was without the zoom lens, it was hard to really see the ball, but with my camera and the zoom, I could see everything really clearly.
How fun. And no obstructions, right? Nobody jumped in your view.
Nobody.
Waving their hands. And
there was a tree that was kind of hanging down, but I mean, I literally remember looking through my lens of my camera and it was going like this. It was shaking because everybody in the grandstand was just going, and I had this fleeting thought. I said, I hope these grandstands are strong enough.
Well, Evan, you're just extraordinary. Thank you so much for joining me. And we could go on and on and talk. I mean, you have photographed so many golf courses. And which course have you gone back to the most to photograph of all the 600 championship courses that you photographed? Which one have you photographed the most?
Pebble Beach.
Ah.
I go there, well, not this last year because of COVID, but I'm actually heading there next month. I usually go there once or twice a year. They have a handful of licensed photographers. Basically, you have a deal with Pebble Beach.
Sure.
That allows you to go there and photograph the course and then sell the images. And so if you don't have that, you can't do it. You can't just go there and photograph it and sell the images. So I usually make it a point of going once or twice a year. And so I've been there over the last 20 years, a number of times.
So, well, what a great life. What a great career. And to be so passionate about what you do, and why not? I mean, do you play as much as you used to or not?
No, I don't play as much as I used to. But that's okay. I hadn't played in months. I did a shoot in Hawaii a few weeks ago. And so I managed to, I said, I'm not coming to Hawaii and not playing golf.
Sure.
Yeah. So.
Well, you must have more frequent flyer miles than most journalists that I know, because you travel. You are not home, you know, for that long before you're off to your next golf course. Thank you so much, Evan Schiller, golf course photographer extraordinaire. Hope to get you back on Sports Interview real soon.
Thanks, Anne. It was just really wonderful. It was great. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.